The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Second hour. Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday morning. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Herm Edwards. Fine Arizona State head football coach. We love Herb. Used to do a weekly with us for a long time. He is going to join us in the next hour of the program. We are excited about that. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit about the sport Herm is in. It is big. Recruiting is big in college football. And a lot here in the last couple of weeks, we've talked about Jeremy Pruitt and the staff at UT, what they're getting done on the recruiting trail. John Garcia Jr. is the director of football recruiting for SI now, and he is on the line with us. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Doing fantastic. Sitting here in Nashville, it's a gorgeous day, and right now, east of us in Knoxville, I got to be feeling pretty good right now. Now, that doesn't win you football games, but it is something you can build off of, and right now, when you sit here in most, you know, I guess recruiting publications or what have you, wherever you look, you see them as a top three class right now in 2021. Most people have them number two in the country for 2021. What is Jeremy Pruitt and his staff doing right now, especially in the last couple of weeks where they have been extremely active?
Yeah, this looks like a very calculated, you know, almost airstrike on the 2021 class. And it really shows you the power of momentum in college football recruiting. I think sometimes we dig so deep into it, those of us who cover it every day, that we're looking for the differences between school A and school B, that sometimes we forget these are 17-year-old kids, 18-year-old kids. And if they know somebody and that somebody's going to Tennessee, it's just easier for that momentum to build and for them to see that same sort of light at the end of the tunnel. So I think there's a whole lot of they're filling up, I need to get my spot going on with Tennessee, but you have to establish that with big fish, and they've been able to do that in very important areas. Whether you go to the top edge rusher in Alabama with Dylan Brooks verbally committing, you go to the top maybe defensive player in Florida, Terrence Lewis from South Florida verbally committing, you start putting those pieces together, and guys want to jump in on that. And then this weekend, you really hit the next level with this 2021 class with the quarterback. I don't think any class is complete without the quarterback. So Caden Salter jumping on board from the state of Texas, which is a very, you know, untraditional place for Tennessee, I think, again, speaks volumes to where momentum can take you. And what Salter told me is he said, look, during quarantine and all this stuff, nobody was hitting me as hard as Tennessee. Multiple coaches, very consistent, and they had a very clear plan laid out for his recruitment and told him they weren't even going to take other quarterbacks who tried to verbally commit until he made a decision one way or the other. So they really use that youth that they have on the coaching staff and that versatile experience at different programs like Pruitt at Alabama and so many others to really combine to become a true force on the recruiting trail. And obviously it's worked out about as well as they could have hoped for.
You brought up during this pandemic, the last couple of months, how much has that changed what they do? How much has that changed, you know, the recruiting life the last couple of months as everybody's been quarantined?
Yeah, it's changed everything. I mean, there are no visits. There's nothing in person. There's no evaluations going on. in person. So in terms of from the kids' perspective, you really can't improve your stock very much, even if you are so much bigger, stronger, faster than you were as a, you know, in the 2019 season. You know, there's no tangible evidence of that to this point. And from the school's perspective, you can't show off that new facility. You can't show off the funding that you have for a school like Tennessee or anybody else. So what really has separated the schools that have momentum and those who don't is that immediate adaptation to technology and the potential to use social media and group FaceTimes and really anything to stir up some interest. And that's, those are the teams that have been able to take advantage, and Tennessee has absolutely been chief among them. But I think what maybe even is more important during this time of sort of forced complacency, especially again, talking about teenagers, you get some kids on board and they start talking to each other. You know, there's so many kids who've committed to Tennessee in the last 2 weeks that have told me, well, four or five other Tennessee commitments have been on me about it. They answered my questions. So this peer recruiting is always an important element of any strong class. But in this time, everybody has a little bit more time on their hands. So that has hit a different level. And I think that's something that I didn't necessarily expect when all these rules went into place. I thought it was just going to be the creative teams and the consistent teams with energy are going to win in recruiting. But really it's those that had strong commitments on the front end who are willing to turn into those recruiters, which is becoming more common. But again, the swarm that Tennessee has had is really unprecedented, and nobody has as many commitments. So theoretically, nobody has as many peer recruiters as the Vols do.
Interesting. John Garcia Jr. on the line with us, director of football recruiting for SI Now. So what's next for Jeremy Pruitt and his staff? Is there still another big fish they can land while they've got all this momentum?
Yeah, I mean, there's still more prospects on the board who are set to make decisions here in the near future. I think the guy I'd keep the closest eye on, Miles Campbell. He's deciding May 18th, big tight end prospect in this 2021 class. Big group of schools. There's no true, I'm down to one or two. There's about a half dozen schools in there. But you start to look at the other schools involved and you say that Tennessee's got a good chance. When you're talking Georgia Tech, NC State, schools like that. So I think that's something to keep a close eye on as a UT fan. And then really beyond that, it's even bigger fish. You know, guys that a month or two ago we weren't even talking about associated with Tennessee. So as that class fills up and you theoretically only have a few spots left, now you shoot for the stars while you have your momentum. So that means five stars. That means All-American type prospects. So you go down to Georgia, which is, of course, a pipeline state. Amarius Mims, maybe the number one tackle in America, considered a Georgia lean, but he's not committing for a while now. So if you're Tennessee, you shoot your shot, and he has shown considerable renewed interest in UT. And they're doing the same thing with Louisiana's top prospect, five-star defensive tackle Mason Smith. He's been very public, like the rest of us on Twitter, like what is going on at Tennessee? And when you tweet something like that, you guys know the Vol fans are going to jump on there. And obviously the coaching staff was already involved in recruiting him. So that general curiosity about Tennessee could be something really positive for UT. So, again, the impact on other kids committing is really tangible here with fellow top prospects. So I think you keep an eye on the tight end. But after that, I think Tennessee, with these last few spots open, they're really going to shoot their shot with some big-time prospects. And why not at this point? The track record is improving every year on the field, and the recruiting is obviously hitting an apex right now. So take advantage of the window while you can as we build up to the 2020 season.
Talking to John Garcia Jr., Director of Football Recruiting for SI Now. And John, it sounds to me like, maybe I'll just throw it to you as a question here. Obviously, Tennessee's on a roll here, but in this atmosphere that we're in right now, as you just explained, do you think it's fair to say that this is the rich get richer type of situation if it's hard to improve your stock? Or how do you see it right now in terms of top teams continuing to grab the best players?
Yeah, you know, I think the programs hurt the most by the shutdown are the second and third tier, or the schools that are not in the most fertile recruiting areas. Because what you could sell during an offseason, if you're Wisconsin or Minnesota or Iowa or Syracuse, you can sell, hey, you know, the weather's solid right now. come check it out. Maybe we can expand your mind during this time of year with an early official visit, something like that. But obviously, that's all wiped out. So now the next time you're going to go to a cold weather place as a recruit from the South, it's going to be cold. You know, it could be snowing at one of those places. So that off-season jolt that is always a potential for those schools is completely wiped out at this point. So every school has really been forced to go local and regional with recruiting. Even this Tennessee run, outside of the quarterback from Texas, it's been neighboring states in the South, you know, Alabama, North Carolina, Georgia, certainly always pipeline states. So even that kind of run, it still, you know, is a little bit more geared towards the regional recruits. So I think those schools on that middle tier really do suffer at a time like this, which means at the end of the day, the schools that are going to get the benefit of the doubt are the usuals, right? Georgia, Alabama, yeah. LSU, Ohio State, USC. Those are the schools that have that sort of familiarity with kids, even if they've only been once or twice. So those second and third tier schools are really struggling right now in recruiting for the most part because they can't get kids on campus to really expand their horizon. So those built-in blue bloods are, you know, fortunately for them, going to be able to take this thing and run with it right now and certainly into the future.
So with that in mind, John, what strategies are those second and third tier schools using? And I have in mind a couple of schools in our listening area, you know, Vanderbilt right down the road and then Middle Tennessee, for example, a team not in the Power Five, but trying to stay relevant, et cetera, trying to do their thing. So what strategies are those teams trying to use to do the best they can in this time?
They got to double down on the evaluations, you know, and it's there's some people who feel like this shutdown and lack of tangible gains from the prospects is actually a good thing because it forces you to value that game tape that much more. So go find true fits for your system based on their Friday night ability instead of the Friday night ability combined with track, combined with camps, combined with all of these other things that sometimes dilute the evaluation to a degree. Focus on Friday nights and guys who could fit with you. So maybe hit another group of prospects that you wouldn't normally, you know, focus in on with recruiting. Do things like that. But for those schools, you know, unfortunately, didn't come down to the season. You know, God willing, we have one. They got to win, and that's still the best way for a school to jump to the next tier. You know, look at North Carolina 2 years ago. Awful in recruiting. Awful on the field. They get a young quarterback. They get some excitement back with Mac Brown and that familiarity. They win on the field, push Clemson more than anyone during the regular season, and follow it up with strong recruiting because now it's like you see it. You see the trajectory on the field combined with when I'm taking a visit, it's nice, and all of those things. So I think for those schools, it's still going to be about Saturdays, but their recruiting should be focused more on Fridays, which, again, some people feel like is the way it should be anyway. So I think it forces the true evaluators to stand up, the true guys who can go in and find those gems who are great fits, not necessarily great testers or basketball players or wrestlers or track and field sprinters, but the true football players who fit what you want to do. But again, you know, you got to help yourself on Saturdays at the same time.
We're talking to John Garcia Jr. from SI Now here with us on Darren Donovan Chase. And I do want to ask you about Talia Tagovailoa announcing he's going to transfer. It came out over the weekend that he's going to transfer for Alabama. Where do you see the best fit for him being that we could actually see him get some playing time?
I mean, Talia is a wide open spread kind of guy. Let him play point guard in an offense. So in terms of a fit, I would go to the more wide open looks. I think what Ole Miss, we think, is going to do under Lane Kiffin, that would make sense. I think Mike Locksley and Maryland would make some sense. Obviously, there's strong familiarity there. He committed to Locksley when he was the OC at Alabama. But for the Tagovailoas, and it's such a public story now, for them, the fit is so much more about football. It really is about that family feel and culture. Remember, you know, the whole family moved outside of Birmingham when Tua decided to go to Alabama, and that's why Talia finished up his high school career there. So there's a lot of conversations about the schools in Florida because Tua is now a Dolphin. So, you know, Miami, FAU, FIU, UCF, USF, a lot of those schools are pretty wide open or want to become more wide open offensively. So I would always lean a little bit more towards geography with the Tagovailoas because it really is about all of them. I mean, Tua has been public about saying, my dad didn't want me to go to Alabama. I wouldn't have gone. He was pushing Alabama and had to almost convince Tua. So I think that the geography is really important here. But, you know, as a recruit, Talia Tagovailoa was really high on Tennessee, was really high on LSU because of that down south family culture. So I do think that there is the possibility that he you know, can go a little bit further away from that South Florida footprint. But it's going to be tough just because of the family. If they all do move down there, I do think that those schools will have sort of a built-in advantage. So I think it'll be interesting. There's a lot more schools out there on the potential list for Talia than we typically see with the transfer quarterback. Usually it's a small group, one or two schools, and it makes a lot of sense. You can make the case for about 10 with Talia, and I think that's why we haven't heard a whole lot of tangible information items since his announcement of transferring from Alabama. I think a lot of that is TBD, but Tennessee was definitely in it. Obviously, that staff has a ton of ties to the state of Alabama and the University of Alabama, and that's why they were heavily involved, maybe more heavily than people realized before he did stick with the Crimson Tide.
And then another transfer quarterback, JT Daniels, previously of USC. He's still out there. Where do you see him ending up?
See, I think his is a little more complicated. I think Talia needs to be developed. So the thought of sitting somewhere a year, maybe even two, would make sense. For JT, it's about can he play now, which is still pending, right? There's still legislation that needs to happen for his immediate eligibility. And there is no, I'm going to go sit somewhere. So I think there's the potential that he could remain at USC should he be deemed ineligible to play in 2020, because the Slovis kid who's the impending starter there could theoretically, you know, move on to the NFL after 2020. So I think that one is much more complicated. I think Daniels, you know, he's much more coveted, right? He's a guy who's already had a year of starting experience, probably a better pedigree than Talia coming out of high school as well. So I think there's no shortage of options for JT, but the ball is really more so in USC's court and the NCAA's court in terms of whether or not he's going to be able to play elsewhere immediately in 2020. But there's certainly no, I'm going to go sit behind prospect X and wait my turn. He wants to get on the field now. He did the same thing coming out of high school. He skipped his final year of high school so he could go be the guy at USC right away. So he's going to have that same mentality this time around, and a source in L.A. told me that's the only reason he left. He loves USC, he's an L.A. kid, all of those things. But Slovis really sort of took the ball and ran with it under Graham Harrell in 2019. So no reason to unseat him at USC. But if he has to sit out a year anyway, he may be better off, you know, being the backup and then getting the reins in 2021 at the school that he wanted to play at all along. So I think that one is a much more complicated case. I believe there's a vote May 20th that is going to impact whether or not these one-time transfers get that immediate eligibility. So that's something that we're going to look a little bit more towards here in the next week or so.
John, good stuff. Really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this, and we'd love to talk to you down the road.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that is John Garcia, Jr. He is the Director of Football Recruiting for SI Now, and we do appreciate his visit. A lot of good info in there. We'll come back. Herm Edwards in the third hour of the program, about 12:30. We will talk to Herm Edwards, who is Arizona State's football coach. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Herm Edwards in the third hour of today's program. Greg Wyshynski in the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Could be a potentially big day, and I don't suspect we'll really get any new news today. But with that being said, you never know. How do we think Major League Baseball? I said yesterday, I feel like Major League Baseball, the next sport to come forward and have their plan in place, is going to be Major League Baseball when it came to the NBA, NHL, and MLB. I said MLB would be the one. Now, I'm not sure it's going to be today, but the owners have agreed upon something. They have sent it to the PA of Major League Baseball, and it's now up to them to agree or counter with something.
Be the bad guys?
be the bad guys? How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, it's a trap. I'm concerned as a baseball fan that doesn't want to see this be hashed out in the public. I mean, let's be perfectly frank. Nobody wants to see a labor dispute of any kind played out during this time, right? It's a terrible look. But what the owners have done, unfortunately for the players, is they're going to say, hey, we got this great plan. Okay, here we go. Let's throw it to the players. And if you know that it makes the players look bad if there's anything in there about a plan that was not put together by them. It makes them look bad if there's anything they disagree in there. I don't like that, the way the owners did that. I know it's exciting for all us fans to say, okay, they've got a plan, and they want to play 80 games, and they want to start in July, and here's all the things they're going to try to do. But you know, the business side of it is important to the players, right? Are they supposed to just take anything that was thrown in there? I hope they can do this behind closed doors in the next couple of weeks without it getting messy.
Well, I guess I'm being a pessimist, but I think it's going to get messy. I hate seeing millionaires and billionaires fighting over money during this time, and I know that, you know, Mark Teixeira was on Golic and Wingo this morning. A lot of players have been quoted in saying that the 50-50 split that the owners have proposed is a non-starter for them. But, you know, I see both sides of it. Everybody wants to get their money, but this is a unique situation. So I feel like you need to come to an agreement. You need to do it fast for this season, and then don't, you know, then worry about beyond this season after the fact. But to have a labor dispute, as you put it, a CBA type agreement and fight going on during this COVID-19 outbreak is ridiculous, and it's going to be a very, very bad look for baseball. It's going to be a black eye that I don't know if they can overcome if they let it get out of control.
It is a bad look. It's not the time to be fighting over money. But we also don't know, you know, is it insulting what was sent their way? Is it fair? I mean, we don't know, right?
I don't think it's completely unreasonable. It's basically a 50-50 split of the revenues that are gained this particular season. So I don't think it's unreasonable. But I can see on the player's hand, is this something that's going to open up the door to a salary cap? And so I just think they need to talk it out, and they don't need to do it back and forth in the media. I think if I were a player, I would be open-minded to a 1 year, let's get something done, but this does not need to be a gateway into something that is beyond what's been collectively bargained, right? This is a special set of circumstances. If it's 1 year and 1 year only, splitting the revenues 50-50, which is a lot more like other sports, you know, baseball is still very, because of the strength of their players' union, the players are more advantageous position because there is no salary cap per se. You can go over the salary cap as long as you're willing to pay the luxury tax, and less teams are willing to do that these days. But there still is that revenue sharing part where no team is limited on what they can pay. If they want to go over the luxury tax threshold to sign a great player, they can do that. So I don't know. I mean, there'll be a lot of debate on what's fair, what's not. But the bottom line is the fans don't want to hear it. They just want to see baseball. They're craving to see baseball.
They're going down a dangerous path that they did in the 90s. And I thought they were, you know, they've tried to put the 90s, that's been several decades behind them in the rearview mirror. And you don't want to revisit that because yeah. 90s is where they got themselves and the sport in a whole lot of trouble. And they had to dig out of it. And they've dug out of it. And
it took the steroid era to help dig them out of it.
Yeah, but you don't want to go back to anywhere near that. And there's been a lot of unrest in those decades, in the 80s and 90s, and you don't want to get back to that. This is not the time to be bickering over money. I mean, people just don't want to hear that. Unemployment rate is at the highest. What's the last? I haven't even checked. Last time I looked, it was 30-plus million people unemployed. Like, people don't want to hear you arguing about money and, you know, whether it's fair that your salary's cut, you know, a certain amount. Like, people don't want to hear that. It's just
exactly
a bad, bad, bad look if it gets to that point. And I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it's not.
Well,
but
Right.
If so, it does, so if it'll be bad.
If you're Tony Clark, right, this is his position is, we talked about this when we paused for spring training. We had some initial negotiations, and the owner said, we'll give you the service time, but we're going to prorate your salaries based on how many games are played. And Tony Clark and the players said, yes, sounds good. So in their mind, the negotiation was done. If you play half a season, you'll get half your salary. The owners are now coming back and saying, hey, we got a little problem here because we don't think there's going to be fans in the stands. And so our revenues are going to be way less than
a
half
fair.
A season under normal
and that's
circumstances.
Fair.
That's not unreasonable, right?
That's not
but
unreasonable.
Tony Clark is saying, but wait a minute. We agreed. We get half of whatever percentage of the season is played, we get our salaries. And so I can see both sides of it. So how do you come to an agreement? Hopefully they can do that over the next few weeks and do it without it getting messy.
Yeah,
but,
because they
you
need,
know, we know how this goes. It's not easy.
They need to negotiate.
Who's wrong?
Just
like
for
what
this.
What is the 50-50 the way to go in
it's,
your
if
mind?
There's
whatever
no
the revenues
fans
are,
in the stands, it's wrong. Yeah, the players don't – you're going to lose that PR battle. It's wrong. If there's not, and we don't know, by the way. Are they saying there's not going to be fans in the stands? Is that
– Well, they're going to do what they can, right? They want
to
maybe
be limited,
get a percentage
no matter
of
what.
Fans.
Yes.
Yeah, there could be limited fans at some point, but they don't know.
I feel like that's one reason why they want to expand the playoffs from 10 to 14 teams, because the hope would be that they have some fans in the stands by then. And if you're getting some playoff revenue, you can recoup some of the money. I know that's not the only reason they want to expand, but I think that's one thing that you factor in there. 50-50 without fans, I mean, yeah, I see your point, Darren, that it is wrong. But at the thing that I'm worried about the most is both sides are using this as an excuse to fight over things that they don't need to fight about right now. And that's where the bad look is going to come into play. And this is a conversation for another day. I understand that they have to get some sort of agreement in place to figure out where the money's going to go, what money comes in. But as we've said, nobody wants to hear them crying over losing money right now. It that's just not going to help anybody. And so I'm afraid that they're just using this. You know, the DH rule, okay, whatever. I mean, that figure that out. That's fine. But having this be the time to fight over stuff that whether the owners want them in place or the players want it in place, this isn't where you do it. This isn't the platform.
Mark Teixeira was on Golic and Wingo this morning talking about this situation. Here's what he had to say.
Well, historically, it absolutely is a non-starter. And I've been on those phone calls, you know, during labor negotiations. And, you know, the Major League Baseball Players Association has a very strict stance about – salary caps and revenue splitting, and they want an open market. They want a free market, and they're right. You know, in any other year, if this was a negotiation, the players would hold firm, and you know, I'd be behind them 100%. Unfortunately, with these crazy times and this economic disaster that we have in our country, the owners just can't afford to open up the game and pay players a full fare when they're only going to be getting pennies on the dollar back for every game played. So, unfortunately, I think both sides are right here. Owners are not going to play this season losing a boatload of money, and players are going to hold firm because that's what they've always done. They've always held firm together and basically said, we're not going to take, you know, the owners giving us a raw deal here when it comes to finances.
You know what's missing in all this talk?
What's that?
Where's the safety part? Anybody concerned about that, or is it just about money?
Oh, that's a given. They're talking about
Teixeira
that.
Teixeira did talk about that earlier on.
That's everything they're talking about.
Anybody concerned about the safety, or is it just about getting paid?
No, they're very concerned. In fact, I saw an article by Ken Rosenthal in the Athletic, and he was talking about players. He actually had conversations with players who have health issues, right? There's a guy, David Dahl, you know, good, talented player who's had a lot of injury problems. When he was in the minors, he had a collision with a player, and they had to remove his spleen. So that affects his immune system. it's a weak immune system going forward. So is he more at risk? There are a handful of players that had cancer years ago and are in recovery for that. And they've been consulting with their doctors. So all those things are getting covered for sure. I think that's the first priority. But with the business part of it and how you split up the revenues, it's an important part of the conversation. But I hope both sides can be reasonable. You know, if you're a player, I do think the reality is without the fans, they're not generating as much money. And this is not like a historical negotiation, as Mark Teixeira pointed out.
Did you guys see Sean Doolittle's tweet yesterday? I guess it was. He said, and it's a long thread, but I'll just read a part of it. Quote, "Bear with me, but it feels like we've zoomed past the most important aspect of any MLB."
I see what
MLB.
He said. He did zoom. He worked zoom in.
He
that
did.
Was good.
He did. "Important aspect of any MLB restart plan, health protections for players, family, staff, stadium workers, and the workforce it would require to resume a season." And then he goes into detail on things. So I do believe that there are some that realize, hey, there's a bigger issue here that we need to discuss, and that's the safety and well-being of everybody involved.
I would hope that's the first priority. That's what everybody says that when they're having discussions about it in virtually every article I've seen, that they say, let's preface this by saying the health experts are going to lead us here. We can't do anything that'll endanger our players. I feel like I've seen that, but so I don't know what Sean Doolittle is referring to there.
Well, like I said, it's a really long thread that you would need to go read. It would be kind of boring for me to just read the whole thing here on radio. But yeah, he goes into detail on what he means.
So what do we think?
He's saying that those conversations are not to his liking there. I mean, none of us know what's going on behind the scenes, but I'm looking at feedback that I've heard from players. For example, James Van Riemsdyk, who was on that player part of the committee of the return to play group that's been meeting, very heavily over the last few weeks for the hockey side, trying to work through all this stuff. They've all said the right thing. John Tavares has said the same thing, that they're having those discussions. So I don't know what's going on with baseball, but I would assume that they've got to be covering that.
One would hope, right? So how do we think this is going to play out?
I think
is this going to be short, long? Is this, how long? How long are they going to talk about this?
There's going to be, I believe, at least a couple weeks.
I saw Jeff Passan on Get Up this morning. He was interviewed, and he says they basically have 2.5 weeks of time to sort this out before the clock starts ticking on getting everybody to a spring training site to start the clock of preparing for a July 4th or whatever date they want to open there. So 2.5 weeks, I think, is the cushion that they have to work this out.
Can baseball do something in 2.5 weeks? We're going to find out.
We'll find out.
I don't know about that.
The past, usually they have not been able to do something in 2.5 weeks.
But they
time
will,
is not their friend on this one.
They will screw themselves if they drag this on. I mean, it's only going to hurt them because people aren't going to have any patience for it.
I hope that they can figure that out. I hope they realize that.
Billionaires and millionaires.
Well, I mean, what happens a lot of times is right. You know, we've talked about this. You get lost in a sense of reality, right? You're out of touch with reality. And when you're a different pay structures and you live a different way. And so you just hope that they don't get lost in kind of their lifestyle and lost from a sense of reality and hope that they have, you know, enough sense to get in there and go, okay, let's be real careful how this all plays out publicly. Because if we're not careful, we'll be made to look pretty bad in all this. This is going to be a really bad look, a black eye for the sport and all of us if we're not careful on that. Because already, you know, whenever you read the headlines, you know, an ugly financial battle is on the line to save the 2020 MLB season. Fans are like, really? You know, think about all the people that are unemployed or already have had their salaries cut. They're like going, really? Yeah, people just don't want – and I get it. It's just a headline. Then you have to get in there and read it. But people just don't want to hear all of that in these times. They don't want to hear billionaires and millionaires squabbling over their percentage of what they should get paid. So they're just going to have to be real careful. That's all I would have to say on this is be careful what gets out there, because there's people like Jeff Passan and others. And the problem is each side wants – their version out there, right? So they're not going to remain quiet. The owners are going to want to shed the light they believe is the right thing. So they're going to leak information to people, to their people, whoever their people are in the media, to get it. And then the Players Association and Tony Clark, they're going to want their side and, you know, say, look what the owners are trying to get us to sign. And they're going to want their version. And so they're just going to need to be real careful, because both sides feel they're going to feel they're on the right, and they're going to want their version out there, and that's what we're talking about. They just better be careful how much of this gets out there and how bad it makes all of them look. So I'll be curious to see where this goes from here.
Yeah, I will too. I will too. I mean, I just feel like it won't be easy, and I think it would be – yeah, what's probably going to end up happening is they're going to bicker with each other, and then the NBA and the NHL will be back playing before they get this figured out.
Well, the NBA is already up. They're already talking about, you know, some facilities have opened up. I just saw where some Jazz players have shown up. You know, players are starting to trickle back in. And so you do wonder, is the NBA inching a little bit closer to resuming something, whatever something is? They're scrapping the regular season, playoffs, whatever their plan is, but they are opening things back up and players are starting to trickle back in. Along those lines, to wrap up the second hour of the program, when we come back, there's been some people that have questioned just, I guess, the power of the subject, which is Michael Jordan for The Last Dance. People questioning the power of him having, you know, say in what's put out there. We'll talk about that and how you guys feel about that. And there's some pretty prominent names, especially one in particular that has got a history of doing really, really good documentaries. And he's saying, hey, if it was me, Michael Jordan wouldn't have the power. So I'll get your thoughts on that to close out the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next. They're through eight episodes in The Last Dance, which they show two episodes on Sunday nights on ESPN. And we've certainly spent a lot of time talking about it, just like everybody else has. They've gotten really big ratings, and it's it's about one of the best players, athletes we've ever seen in any sport in our lifetime. Maybe the best, depends on who you talk to. And The Last Dance on Michael Jordan, and like I said, the final two episodes will be this Sunday. I was reading some stuff yesterday, and I know a lot of this has been out there, but it continues to mount, especially with the last two episodes. But a guy that has made a lot of documentaries, Ken Burns, he was kind of the first to get out there and call out the journalistic integrity of The Last Dance. And he did an interview on NPR on their website, and he said that PBS would never let him do a documentary where the subject being Michael Jordan, had the final say in what gets cut. Also, there was a guy that came out on Monday. It's called The DA Show. And he did the same thing, kind of ripped them for letting Michael Jordan, you know, get all the say in all this, and suggest that this is not how you go about doing this. And so others have brought this up as well. And, you know, a lot of this is questioning because it got into him leaving and going and playing baseball. And all the speculation that we talked about back at the beginning stages of this is how would they handle, you know, all the rumors that were out there about, you know, Michael Jordan and his gambling and his father's mysterious death and all of that. And so people, I think this is why this is drumming all this back up again, because I guess they weren't satisfied with how it was presented in The Last Dance, because Michael Jordan has the final say. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it's an excellent point by Ken Burns, and I think he's a guy that when you think of documentaries, he's one of the first guys you think of, right?
No question.
Whether it's a sports documentary or something other than sports. I've watched his Civil War one. I've watched his Vietnam War one. He's fantastic at how he puts these together. So I think what he's saying is factually true. There's no question about it. You give up something when you allow Michael Jordan to have the last say. I don't think there's any question about that. That is a fact. But I will say this. It's the only way you were going to get it done.
Yep.
Right?
That's exactly right.
And so would I be willing to make that trade if I'm putting that together? Hey, Michael says we're not doing this unless he has the final say. Otherwise, we don't have a show. I think it's worth it to have a show, right? We just have to realize that as we watch it.
Yeah, because my whole thing is I've been entertained. I've enjoyed it. And so have a lot of other people. So who cares what it took to make it happen?
A lot of people do, though. You don't.
Why?
But a lot of people do. Because of what I just said. There's a lot of people believe that journalistically it's not the correct – you're not truly portraying the real story. They're questioning what's being put out there. Like you're leaving a lot – in other words, they're basically saying you're leaving a lot of good stuff out because Michael Jordan's not going to let that get out there. It is portraying Michael Jordan in a certain light, and they're basically saying it's not exact. We're already getting a hint and a glimpse of what it was like, the fights in practice, how he was. But they're saying, yeah, you're not really getting the story on it. You're getting some of the story. And maybe that doesn't matter to you, but there are people that absolutely are questioning that.
Yeah, and I know that he did apologize to the director, you know, about his comments and that maybe he went a little too far with it. Okay, if that bothers some people, then fine, but I would rather have it this way than not have it at all. That's just my personal opinion. Now, if you want to question the journalistic integrity or whatever, I mean, there are truths being told. Is it the whole truth? Okay, then I guess not. But I still like the way it's been done. I don't have an issue with it.
Well, it's in our business, okay, if there's a big story, a big subject, a big person involved in a subject, and they'll come on the show, but they won't answer questions about that. It's the old adage, okay, are you going to take the interview or you're not going to take the interview?
Yeah, but I will say,
if you can't touch the subject that people really want to hear.
Sure, and we've used the phrase, well, there are questions we have to ask, they're not going to answer, but we have to ask, and that's on them if they don't want to answer the question.
But no, they're saying you can't ask. You know, we've all been faced with it, that you cannot ask about that. And then you have to go, but that's what people want to hear about.
Right.
If you're having them on, that's what people want to hear.
And
if you're not touching that.
There have been some that we've just said, okay, forget it. Because the whole point of having the person on was to ask those questions. And if you're going to block that, then there's no point.
I know I've said that over the years. I've said, fine, that I'm not interested in the interview.
Yeah.
But not everybody feels
and there's
that way.
And there's been times where we've gone the other way and
exactly.
said, okay, this
no
guy
doubt.
Is worth, this
yes.
woman is worth having on even despite the limitations
sure.
we might
have. We've done both.
So,
that is correct.
Right. So I think we just have to know what we're watching, right? The term storytelling has been used by some of the people, and that's fine. It is great storytelling. I do think you try to realize that maybe this is a version of the story that is in Michael Jordan's perspective, right? He's protecting part of it. It's still a great story. It's still wildly entertaining. And so I think as long as you realize that, then we're fine, right? That's how it should be portrayed. I don't think they've tried to make a secret that Michael Jordan had the final say. Richard Deitch we had on before it aired, and he said, just keep in mind that Michael Jordan is the executive producer of this, and so that is something you're going to want to note while you're watching this. And I've had that in the back of my mind all along, but I've still wildly enjoyed the show.
Wasn't that Richard Deitch telling us, though? He's saying basically the same thing, like, enjoy it, but just keep in mind. I mean, he was already
right.
setting the table.
Because you want to know that what is being put out there is accurate. Right, and I think most of it is right. There's just probably a few subjects in there that, you know, didn't really get
What questions haven't been asked or answered? I guess that's what I want to know, because Michael Jordan addressed the gambling part. David Stern addressed the whole rumors of that it was an 18-month suspension and said that it wasn't true. They both said that it wasn't true. I mean, I believe them when they say that. So I guess I'm curious of what is it that people are missing that he's covering up? That's my question.
I think that's a fair question. I think they have covered – there hasn't been something that has been completely glossed over that they didn't address on some topic. And it includes the sensitive topics of Jordan's behavior and towards his teammates in practice. They have covered
it.
His father's death, the gambling issue, the baseball issue, why did he retire, all of that stuff. They have had a lot of perspectives on that. I think there's just some that would like to have a little bit more outsider's view that's in there. But I agree with you, Chase. It's not like they've completely turned their back on the questions that people want to hear addressed.
Do you guys believe that what is being portrayed is the truth? Do
yes.
you believe?
By and large, yeah. By
no, I'm saying, I guess, the touchy stuff. Do you believe that all that, you know, the reason he walked away is because of that? Do you believe everything that they've said about his father's death? Do you believe all that to be that's how it happened? Or
yes.
do you have questions?
You said this the other day, Darren, when I kind of brought that up. I can't remember if it was – I think it was last week. And you said, don't you think
– Yep, I know where you're going with this.
From 1993 to now, that if there were really something to that story, somebody would have uncovered it. Somebody would have reported it by now in the last 25, 27 years. I tend to believe that is
true. And I do believe that.
And there were some reporters on the Last Dance that said exactly the same thing, right? That, hey, people have looked into it.
Yeah.
If there was something to it, we'd know.
I think that journalists today are too good at their jobs not to uncover a story like that. That, and Darren, you said it perfectly last week, that it would have come out. At the same time, I'll say that, and I respect Ken Burns, baseball, all the documentaries that you named, I love. If you're not getting all the answers out of this that you want, you're so good at what you do, then go do your own and answer those questions. If you don't think they're truthfully being answered, I guarantee you will find somebody that's willing to talk about it. That whether it's somebody that played with Jordan or doesn't like Jordan or what have you. But if you want to uncover a story that you don't think is properly being covered in this documentary, then go do it yourself. There are journalists out there that will do that and will get answers if you don't think those questions are being answered.
Yeah, look, I'm agreeing with you guys. I'm just asking questions. I'm not disagreeing with you. I agree with you. I think probably – I'm just trying to present both sides. I think probably what some people are doing is saying, you know, the way I interpret it is people are saying, you know, hey, you know, Michael is letting you in on a little bit of him, but he's not letting you in on a lot of him. You know, he's limiting how much you see. Basically, there's, you know, the way I interpret it is they're saying this guy's a bigger jerk than he's coming off in the Last Dance. He was an even bigger jerk than what you think. It was really, really tough and suffocating to be around him. Like he crossed the line. That's probably the way I interpret it. And there's a lot of people, and I mean a lot, and you're probably one of them, Chase, that doesn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already kind of letting you know that he was a jerk. But
because he said that.
They're saying there's other levels. There's even more levels. You know, the whole punching and just a lot of probably stuff that would make people go, ugh. Because Michael Jordan is a huge, huge icon. He is a huge brand. And so, I mean, I understand if he doesn't want to. Why would he want it to be a tell-all if it hurts his brand? I mean,
sure.
I get that when he's the one that's behind it. So, and there's a lot of people that don't care to hear if how big of a jerk he was.
Well,
but there
okay,
are other people that do, and so that's probably what it is. In my opinion,
What do you guys think of this as Michael Jordan? You know, the stuff that we did see, right? You're right, Darren. If somebody wanted to do just a documentary, and maybe Michael Jordan decides he doesn't want to be a part of it, of talking to all of his former teammates and really getting into that subject, what was he like as a teammate? You know, forget about what he has to say. I just want to hear what all of you guys
and
have
people
to say.
That played against
call Steve Kerr. I bet
and
Steve
people
Kerr
that came
will,
against.
Steve well, Kerr
but,
will do a tell-all.
But a lot of the guys, but a lot of the guys did speak out, and they did allow some. Will Perdue is one of them. B.J. Armstrong, Steve Kerr. They had their careful way of saying.
I was going to say they were careful.
What was going
they
on?
They were careful,
but they didn't completely, you know, exonerate him.
True.
I wonder how do you think Michael Jordan felt when he saw that? Like Aaron, my wife watching it, she's actually been watching. She's into it. She said he looks like he's really hurt to see this kind of thing. It does bother him years later that this is how he came across, even though he justified it in the way he said it. Do you guys feel like that? That he emotionally, that years later, he's like, boy, I hope it was worth it to do things the way I did?
I agree with what you're saying and what Aaron is saying. I do. But I also know that it's kind of like the Scottie Pippen thing. Like you can't,
he wouldn't do
it. You can't keep doubling down. You can't not like what you see, but then double down and say, but I would do it all over again. Either you care or you don't. You know what I mean? And I'm okay with either one because to each his own. They walk in their shoes. I'm okay if Scottie Pippen, even though I don't agree with the move, anybody who's ever played team sports, I don't agree with the move, but if that's how he felt at the time and it caught up in the moment and he made a mistake, then that's okay. But you can't double down and say, but I would do it again. It's like Michael Jordan can't say, oh, man, you know, he's uneasy with a little bit. It's kind of tough to watch how tough he was and how people really felt about him, even amidst of his greatness. They knew he was the greatest in the world, but how he treated people and how he was and how he pushed people to, you know, breaks and sometimes crossing the line and some of the stuff he did and said. You know, the way we've talked about, the way he treated general, I could not imagine hearing players talk to a general manager the way that he did and the way they did. Now, a lot of us Jerry Krause brought upon himself, but still, when do you ever see athletes talk to general managers
like that? Shows you the
like
power
that
he had.
Right, but you can't, but then on the same thing, I feel like this is who he is, and if that's who you are and that's what made you great, maybe the greatest of all time, that you just have to accept that. Like, you can't be uneasy seeing it, right? Like, you can't get emotional because that's what you are. Have you changed? Are you here to declare in a new documentary that you're a changed man and you're totally different and that's not how you operate? Now you're a soft, gentle human being? Okay, well, tell us about it. I'd love to hear about it.
But I think that's how he's wired. As you gain more wisdom and you get older, maybe you do see things a little differently.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't. But I think it's a great question to ask when you're in a different stage of life. I like seeing that. He did get emotional.
He did.
And the thing that stood out
but
to
I
me
I liked
he
what
said,
he said.
He said, I never asked anybody to do anything that I wasn't willing to do.
But that's what I'm getting at. He's always justifying what he's doing.
Right.
It's like, okay,
but
that's
still,
fine.
It still got to him a little bit.
The point is, you can't expect everybody to be you. There's only one you, right? And it's okay to push people. I guess what a lot of people are uneasy with is how far are you willing to push people that really can't get where you think they need to be. They can't do it. They're not you. And that's what a lot of great athletes, you know, coaches, athletes, they do. It's hard. The greats, a lot of greats, want you to be like them, but you can't. There's only one them. And I get it. They have good intentions, but they're also going about it trying to make something happen that's not going to happen. You understand where I'm going with that?
No, I totally understand. And I'll my last point on this too is I think sometimes we see somebody just be a jerk and they're just a jerk, they're a bad person. And you look at how Jordan treated some of his teammates and how hard he was. I also think it's okay to not like somebody but respect them too. And that's what I feel like a lot of his teammates that have been featured in this. There might be some that they still don't like him. They still think he was a jerk to them, and they still don't agree with his methods, but they also respect the reasons behind it and the fact that they won six championships.
I mean, let's be real honest. How many greats greats are well liked. Honestly, can you give me an example?
That was a Sean Salisbury theme yesterday in his interview.
Yes,
right?
They wanted absolutely. To be. It was fantastic.
Second,
it's lonely
first.
At the top.
Yeah. It's like, how many examples can you really state? I mean, I know there are some. In fact, I bet if we thought about it during the break, we can come up with. But overall, it's not a popularity contest. I mean, that has been the knock on LeBron, right? LeBron has been like, haven't people knocked LeBron saying, hey, he wants to be liked too much. Like, he's too worried about being liked rather than, you know, doing what you have to do to be great. Like, that's been a negative against him, that he's not more like Kobe and Michael, right, of having that killer instinct no matter what.
Yeah,
I guess so, but he still achieved quite a bit. But how many coaches have come and gone where you say, boy, I really like that guy. What a great guy. But just not a great coach, right?
How many championships do those coaches have?
I love X. I love Coach X. But he's just wasn't a great coach.
Is Nick Saban warm and fuzzy? Is Bill Belichick warm and fuzzy? You know, are most of these guys that we identify as greats, are they warm and fuzzy? I mean, I guess you could say Dabo Sweeney is a little bit different mold.
Yeah, there are some that could be both. There are some that could be both, right? Beloved, completely beloved and respected and have the ability to balance both. Tough love when you need it.
How many of Terry Crisp's former players love him now but didn't love him back then?
I mean, I've referenced the Brett Hull interview with Joe Buck how many times on this show? Go listen to what Brett Hull said. He could not stand Crispy, but also said in the same breath, but Crispy's a great guy. If you get to know him, he goes, but at the time when I played for him, I couldn't stand him. He's the meanest person I had ever met.
But you're not paying him to be their friend. You're paying him to be their coach.
Yeah. I mean, I guess – I was just thinking about it, trying to, you know, rifle through Tim Tebow, maybe? Is that maybe a guy that led and led his team to greatness and was well-liked? Is that a good example?
Yeah, Drew Brees might be one.
Drew Brees?
Yeah, Drew Brees.
That's a good one.
Is liked.
But he hasn't done the – he has not – he's won a Super Bowl.
Dwayne Wade? Could Dwayne Wade be in that category?
But you have to be, like, really separated. Like, is Drew Brees, record-wise, but he's got ones. Is he separated from everybody else? Like, in college, like, Tim Tebow will go down in college as one of the greatest college football players ever, right? True?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
His success and what he did? So I that's why I brought that. Like, you have to be separated from everybody else in a certain time period. Is Drew Brees that guy? Is he separated? Is he in that really, really Mount Rushmore elite group?
I think we can go through
a list of a couple hundred people, but whether it's coaches or team leaders. But I do think Michael Jordan's tactics, the picking at you. Not just trash talk during practice, but kind of the jabbing, testing your mental fortitude, sometimes in a demeaning way. Like, definitely the Jerry Krause ones are out there, but Scott Burrell and some of the other guys, the role players, I can see how that would get at you, man. You'd walk around being angry as heck at him, right? He's probably not the only guy that's done that, but that's the kind of thing you pay a price for going about it that way. Even if you do at the end bring out the best in your teammates.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, we'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.